Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Bulls Beat Podcast Show, the Chicago Bulls Podcast.
Welcome back to the Bulls Beat Bulls fans. Doug Tonis here with you discussing our Chicago Bulls. And I apologize for the bit of the hiatus. It was on vacation in Miami, had some other stuff going on, missed a few weeks. Kind of had a point last week where I could either do the Big Red Bus or I could do this show, and I decided to do the Big Red Bus. So I am back, not disappearing. We'll be trying to do shows throughout the summer as long as there's something reasonable to talk about, which may or may not be the case because this is going to be kind of a boring offseason for the Bulls. So allow me a super quick recap of the end of the season since my last show. We had that three-game win streak. Bulls fans just in complete panic. Looked like we're going to end up at ninth. As it turns out, we end up losing out after that, and we end up tied for sixth. I think that is pretty good position. And a lot of Bulls fans upset this team can't even lose properly, not doing the right things. And I'll say this about all that. I wrote this post on Real GM. You may have seen it if you're a Real GM guy. The Bulls had to lose 14 in a row to lose out. And over the last 14 games of the season, the team that lost, or I should say, won the fewest number of games was the Phoenix Suns, who also finished with the number one lottery odds in the draft. The team that won the second fewest was the Mavericks, and or I should say they tied with the Suns. They both won 2 of 14, and they moved up to be tied for third. They were probably around like fifth or sixth before that. The Bulls actually were the third amongst tanking teams in terms of fewest wins over the last 14 games, and they moved up from 8th to tied for 6th. Then you have the Grizzlies with 4, Hawks with 4, Magic with 5, Kings with 6. All of those teams hurt their draft position in the last 14 games. So if you feel like the Bulls just couldn't lose enough, it's not really a reasonable expectation relative to the other teams. And they're playing just complete trash lineups down the end of each of these games. Just complete trash. So I'm not really... It would be nice if they had lost more. And if they had lost one more game, and we're fortunate because we won the tiebreaker with the Kings, right? That was very fortunate for us. But because of that, losing one more game, or I should say, yeah, losing one more, winning one fewer, would have gotten the Bulls about a 1% chance extra at number one, a 1% at two, and a number one, or 1% at three, roughly. So they basically, with if they had tied the Suns and Mavs with the fewest number of wins over the last 14 games, they would have actually impacted themselves by a grand total of 3% total chance, 3.2% actually, to move up in the draft. And they would have done a little better if they could have won only one game or won zero games. If they won zero, they would actually finish tied for third, which would have been exciting. If they won two, they would, or only won one, they would have finished tied for fifth, which would have been a little better, depending if they won the tiebreaker or not, may or may not have made as much a difference because they could have ended up picking sixth from that spot as well. So, you know, it would have been nice, but I think the end of the season, the Bulls really tanked well. And the question really is, could they have tanked better earlier? And when you go back and look at it, I don't think Robin Lopez really got them a bunch of wins. Maybe he could have got them one, but he also played badly at times. I mean, maybe if you play Felicio, he goes off and gets you some win at some point too. I mean, you can only play the season that one way. The Mirotić question is definitely the one where you feel like, wow, this guy maybe could have, you know, changed things a lot. But there were four games where Mirotić played really, really great, and the Bulls won by a small margin. And they were mostly reasonably early on in his stretch back where, you know, you didn't expect Nikola Mirotić to come in and play like a superstar for a month. I mean, he had a PER of like 30 for a month. I mean, if you predicted that, then... yeah, hats off to you, but I didn't predict that. I don't think anyone else predicted that. But even so, he played really poorly in some games that the Bulls barely won. And maybe if you put Portis in those games, the Bulls would have barely lost. They would have barely won them instead because he played bad. So it's hard to say. Maybe if he's not around because they didn't sign him, Bobby Portis isn't suspended for 8 games, and he starts playing better earlier and gets you a couple wins earlier in the season. And maybe the vibe is better earlier. So a lot of different things could have happened. You don't really know. You can only play it out one way. I was not a fan of the Mirotić signing in the offseason. I said this isn't going to work out for us. And as it so turns out, I don't think it really did. I mean, I think if Mirotić wasn't here, you probably would have been up one or two spots further in the draft than you ended up being. And I don't think that 22 pick compensates for that. especially you also are eating a bunch of salary too, which we feel like, oh, we got this 22 pick from Mirotić. Well, yeah, but you're also now, you're paying like $13 million or something for that because of Omer Asik's salary. So it's not like you got that for free. I mean, that's probably a reasonable price to pay for a late round pick in the draft, regardless of the fact that you sent back a talented player for it. So I don't think the Bulls, you know, really made out there. It does seem like teams are valuing picks a lot more than they used to be, and so it's harder to get picks than it once was. And, you know, that just might be the way things go for a little bit going forward, and maybe things will change again. Usually, I think when teams start overvaluing something, it's a good thing to start trying to go the opposite direction. So if teams start overvaluing draft picks, you know, maybe it's time to start looking at trading your draft pick for really good players, because you can get really good players that might help you more than your draft pick. I think a lot of it comes down to the salary, though. The rookie salary is so low relative to the veteran salary that it's a way you can get really great bargains and stay within the cap. You know, teams like Golden State, who are amazing right now, those teams are really going to be in like cap hell like really soon. I mean, Golden State's already kind of in cap hell. They're going to start looking at, do we want to pay $150 million a year to keep Klay Thompson? That's going to be their decision next offseason, right? Because that's how much it's going to cost to keep him. So that's going to be a tricky thing for some of these teams to do. And if the finances become really difficult for teams, and I don't know if you saw, Draymond Green was discussing how, you know, oh, I hope they, you know, they have to keep this team together. They have to keep this team together. It's a lot to say you got to pay an extra $150 million for one player. I mean, it just is. It's just a lot. So I don't think it's so easy as he thinks. And I get that players frequently don't understand how all of those things work, but just is the way it is. So now, if you're looking at the Bulls, we start looking at who are we going to take. And I'll be honest, I'll probably have a little bit better view of that later on. But when I think of how things will go, you know, I look at the general consensus out there, and it seems like pretty much everyone has a top three that's kind of set. And it's going to be like Ayton, Bagley, and Doncic seem like the three guys who look like they're going to be in the top three. Jaren Jackson Jr., I think those four guys to me look like a really solid four. And now here's sort of like my nightmare draft. You have those four guys, and then Michael Porter Jr. goes fifth, and then the Bulls have to decide what to do at number six. You can look at Mo Bamba, you can look at Wendell Carter, you can look at Trae Young, you could look at Mikal Bridges. I think those would be the guys you would be looking at number six if those other five guys go in the top five. And I'm not excited at all about Trae Young, who many mock drafts have the Bulls selecting, and I hope to God they don't take this guy. And maybe I'll be proven wrong. I was not a fan of Steph Curry, who's now one of the top two or three guys in the NBA. So clearly I don't know what I'm talking about all the time. But when people compare him to Steph Curry, they seem to fail to notice that Steph Curry was an unbelievable college three-point shooter, and Trae Young is not. He's at 36% this year. You know, that's just not unbelievable. And granted, you know, he's a freshman. Curry played a couple years, but he was a great shooter as a freshman too. So it's not like he became a great shooter as time went on. And Trae Young definitely has a chance, but he's one of those guys. I just don't see it. I just don't see it with him. So who knows? I could be wrong. If the Bulls select Trae Young, I will say what I did when they selected Lauri Markkanen, which is I'm not a fan of this pick, but the Bulls have a lot more information than me, so I'm just going to wait and see how it goes. That'll be my view. And if they take a guy I like, my view will be similar. I'll say the same thing. We'll wait and see how it goes. I think Michael Porter Jr. is the most intriguing guy in this draft from the perspective of you just have no idea what you're going to get out of this guy. He was probably the number one preseason player in the draft. The guy people thought could be a, you know, a two-way sort of superstar, you know, really great size at the small forward position, great creator, just great all-around game, great everything. So he hurts his back, and all of a sudden he doesn't play the entire year except for like a couple like token halves. And so I think the whole thing with Porter is just really a guy who's had back surgery. Do you want to take a chance on that? And then how does he look after the surgery? Is he really going to be 100%? Back surgery, I got to be honest with you, it scares the hell out of me. I mean, I think this I put in like the ACL category of like there's a good chance you're just never the same from this. Now, I don't know the specifics of his surgery. Maybe there is no reason to have that type of fear. But the medical thing will be a big thing with Porter and how high he goes. And also just because he was the preseason pick as maybe the best guy in the draft doesn't mean that if he had actually played a full season at Missouri that he still would have maintained that ranking. maybe he would have been, you know, just showing all kinds of flaws in his game and wouldn't. But he's a guy who clearly has that kind of superstar upside. And I think if you want to win, you kind of have to gamble on a guy who has superstar upside. And this seems like a pretty deep draft, so maybe that's available in some other spots. Maybe, I mean, Trae Young probably has superstar upside. You know, if he turns into the next Steph Curry, if that comparison is okay, and maybe he does. Wendell Carter, I don't know if superstar upside, probably not, but definitely has a lot of upside to be a valuable player. Power forward, center, can hit the three, stretch guy, athletic, can do kind of defend, can do a lot of things you're going to need. He could definitely be a great player for your team too. I don't know. We'll see. I don't know that I see superstar upside with him. Mo Bamba, I don't know that I see superstar upside. It seems like maybe he'd have Dwight Howard post-back surgery upside. That's probably not fair. DeAndre Jordan is maybe who I think of when I think of Mo Bamba. You know, guy incredibly long, incredibly, you know, he's a good athlete. He's going to block a heck ton of shots. Should be a tremendous rebounder. Should just be, you know, very great from a physical standpoint. But is he really going to give you all of the skills that you need offensively? Probably not going to be a guy who is going to give you a lot of offense. Maybe it's better than it could be, but probably not going to be a guy who's giving you out to a three-point line. Maybe a mid-range jump shooter guy could be where he ends up. But I don't know if he has the offensive upside, but could be a DeAndre Jordan who could maybe anchor a defense. Will definitely be a guy who can finish off a heck ton of lobs for you. I mean, I think he definitely has some plenty of strengths. And then you get to Mikal Bridges, Colin Sexton. After that, we start getting the guys I know a lot less, so I won't even speak to them. Mikal Bridges seems like a really solid guy on both ends of the court, but not sure he's a superstar. Sexton, I don't know so much about, but, you know, quality point guard. So we'll see. I'll definitely beef up my draft analysis, maybe see if I can get Jonathan Givony from ESPN out here onto the draft, and we'll see how that goes. But it'll be exciting to watch the Bulls and see what they do at six. And, you know, maybe we'll move up. We got around, I think it's like an 18% chance total of moving up in the draft. So you got to hope that that pans out for Chicago and that they're able to move up when the lottery drawing occurs. And we'll see in about a month whether that will be the case or not. And so we're looking forward to the Bulls offseason, right? Just to see what happens. And John Paxson came out and he kind of gave us a hint that not a whole lot is going to happen. The Bulls are going to basically come back with the same teams. He counts Portis in the core, spoke very highly of Robin Lopez. Seems pretty clear that Cameron Payne is going to be thrown in as the backup point guard ahead of Jaren Grant. I think I kind of agree with that assessment right now. So we'll see how things go with all of those guys. They obviously have to decide if they want to do an early extension with Bobby Portis, or I guess for that matter, with Cameron Payne. I think there's clearly no way they do it with Payne. Portis, there's some chance, but I think these early extensions for guys who are non-max players pretty much never happen, because the guy thinks, if I just play out this year, I might be a max guy, and the team thinks, you know, if he plays out this year, I may or may not want to keep him. So usually, if you want to do an early extension, someone has to be gaining some benefit, and both teams have a lot of reason to put it off and wait to see what happens. So it's unlikely that the player in his key development years signs at his current value. He's going to want to sign at his future value. And if he's going to sign at his future value anyway, if you're the team, you might as well wait to the future and see if he has it or not, because there's no reason to give him future value early. So unless Portis is willing to give the Bulls a pretty decent discount, I don't see anything like that happening this offseason. But they've talked about him like he's part of the core. They're basically going to bring back the band. I think David Nwaba is the one guy who may not come back. And I think I'm okay with that. You know, I like Nwaba. I think that was a nice little signing. It was great to see him. Fun player to watch. High energy. But he's not a guy who gives you a whole ton of offense. He's kind of a one-dimensional player. He's the type of guy I think you can routinely get relatively cheaply. And so you're going to start looking at, if I sign Nwaba, I'm going to, you know, cannibalize some of my cap space in 2019. And maybe I don't want to do that, because maybe I want to sign someone else. I'll have max money and I want to keep that open for Klay Thompson or Kawhi Leonard or whoever. And so I think that it's probably the case that the Bulls let David Nwaba go. They also just have a lot of depth, right? You got to assume there's a pretty good chance they're going to draft someone on the wing. And so now you're going to have, you know, Chris Dunn and Cameron Payne at point guard, Zach LaVine and Denzel Washington kind of on your wings now. And then if you draft a wing, like say Michael Porter Jr., you might then have a whole lot of stuff going on there in the wing. But it does kind of depend. If the Bulls go big,
then maybe David Nwaba, you know, fits in a little bit better. They have Justin Holliday for another season, though, so you don't necessarily need to fill in that gap. You've got enough depth there. Justin Holliday is not amazing, but he's a solid guy to fill in. So I think the Bulls will be in pretty good shape regardless. And the question really will be with this team, do you want to attempt a mini tank here or not? Because you could start looking at trading guys like Chris Dunn and Bobby Portis to try and get draft picks next year. Now, I spoke earlier, I think that the draft picks are kind of overvalued by teams right now. And so it's difficult. If draft picks are overvalued by teams, you're not really going to get anything good for these guys, in which case I don't think you can do anything with them. But you could look to trade these guys and then just bet on getting more superstars in the draft and getting a good pick next year in the draft and trying to do that and then build off one more year. And I think there's some merit to that. There's also merit to the idea that you just try and win with these guys here, but you probably won't. So you end up kind of tanking by default. You won't tank as badly as you would have if you traded some guys, but the lotto odds don't matter quite as much because they evened out the odds a lot more. So you can move into the top three from much deeper in the draft than you could in the past. Your odds of staying really high are much lower now than they used to be. But the thing is, your odds of getting four through like six obviously are much better if you're just really bad. So the one, two, and three, you know, obviously it's a little bit more wide open now. But, you know, if you want really good players, there's still much better players at four through seven than there are at, say, eight through 10. So we'll see what happens. I think the Bulls clearly have set the direction of they're not going to do that. They're not going to try and trade Portis. They're not going to try and trade Dunn and try and get more picks. I would all be all four in some ways, depending who they get here, trading Dunn and Levine and Portis and even maybe Valentine if I could get future first-round picks sprinkled between 2019 and 2020, picks that look like they can potentially be lotto picks that don't have heavy protection of teams that might lose. You know, you're probably not getting a team that's clearly being terrible to give you those types of picks, but I would maybe be open to doing that. The thing is, I don't think that type of choice is really going to be on the table. And so I think then the next best option, or I should say probably the best option that's realistic, is probably do what the Bulls are doing. Keep all the guys you have. You got a lot of young talent. They might develop into something really good if these guys take steps that are better than you think they might be. And that's really what happened with the Golden State Warriors, right? They took steps better than you thought they might be. No one was thinking the Warriors were going to be a title team the year before they won the title. They thought this was a really good team that was probably going to not have too many defensive liabilities, you know, not enough guys who could drive and score, too much reliance on shooting. And then they became this super elite team. So you never know how things are going to turn out, you know, with guys. They can always do better than you expect. Of course, every team hopes for that, and very few teams get it. You could also be like the next Orlando Magic, right? They had a group of young guys. People thought like, oh, they're all going to develop, and then they never did. You know, is Chris Dunn going to be better than Elfrid Payton? You know, is Lauri Markkanen going to be better than the next Vucevic? Are these guys going to become two-way good players? So, you know, you just can never quite tell how things will go. The Bulls definitely have some young talent. There's reason to think they could develop. There's plenty of reason to think that they won't. And we'll just have to wait and see. If they do develop, this is a team that definitely has potential to be awfully good, especially if they're able to hit in this draft. And I think the Bulls are going to roll with that and hope that these guys develop into a good team. I think if they can work out together this offseason and in the early interviews, they've talked about it. I think that would be very beneficial. I think you could see this team, you know, really build some chemistry is what they need to do. You saw when Chris Dunn, Zach LaVine, and Lauri Markkanen played together, there was no chemistry between those three guys. They're really terrible together on the court. But they seem like they should have a natural fit together. You got Chris Dunn who can penetrate, he can dish off. You got Markkanen and you got LaVine who can catch the ball after someone penetrates and put up a three immediately with a good percentage, or can then drive to the hoop and become a secondary creator. So you've got multiple outlets of shot creation on the floor. You got guys who can decently space the floor. So there's a lot of stuff that should work out. But as it so turns out, Zach LaVine was mostly playing hero ball. Him and Dunn, you know, didn't really find any groove together. Markkanen just became a guy who set picks and became more uninvolved in doing other stuff. So the Bulls need to figure out how to make that happen next year. And this is going to be a really key thing for Fred Hoiberg as coach. Paxson lumped a lot of praise on the Fred Hoiberg as coach, and it's really difficult to gauge this coaching year because coaching-wise, I'll say this for Hoiberg. He got the guys to play hard, and I like that. That's a good start, but I'm not sure I think he did anything else well. Like, I'm not saying he was terrible, But when you saw these guys who you felt should be complementary pieces and they weren't, then what is he doing as coach? How is he not able to make these guys work that seem like they should work on paper and should be good fits for his offense, but they didn't? The Bulls, you know, generally ended up just doing a lot of ISO type scoring with a lot of guys. They didn't really have a lot of great teamwork out there, and that's kind of on him. So I'm not sure that Hoiberg showed me anything. We will see what happens with him. I mean, he's definitely coming back. I think that's correct. I don't think they should get rid of him. But I think Hoiberg really needs to show that he can make these pieces work together so that their strengths complement each other. That's not happened yet, and we'll see if it's able to happen next year, because I think that'll be the key as to whether the Bulls become a team that wins 40-plus games or whether they're a team that wins in the 20s or 30s again this season coming up will be how well he does. Of course, if they draft a future superstar, if they draft Michael Porter Jr., and then all of the upside of him comes and he becomes a fantastic player, then you know that could obviously swing things considerably as well, or any other player that they might draft. I use Porter Jr. because he seems to have like the biggest randomness to his ceiling of any of the guys next season that they might draft. So we'll see how things shake out. Anyway, that will do it for this edition of the Bulls Beat. Hopefully I'll get a Big Red Bus recorded with Fred sometime today as well, and you can get a double dose of your Bulls fun. Should be hosting my draft party for those who are interested in going to that this year. Details of that, like always, will be up on the Real GM forum, so you can check it out there. And I will talk to you guys next week.